I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
President Trump has put a priority on women, on authentic health.
A one-on-one discussion with the creator of the Geneva Consensus Declaration, Valerie Huber. She weighs in on the latest global developments of this historic coalition.
A different international court cannot make a country change their internal legal system just to abide by what, you know, ideology wants.
Pro-abortion ideology pushed in an international court and the impact on national sovereignty.
That was when Grace Center began, from this vision that he gave me and from that answered prayer.
Saving lives through adoption and daycare in Ethiopia, the organization that is quickly growing.
A pro-life move on the world stage for the Trump administration. President Trump has rejoined the Geneva Consensus Declaration. It is a coalition of nations united in support of pro-life, pro-family, and pro-women policies. The declaration's objectives include securing meaningful health and development gains for women, to protect life at all stages, and reject abortion as a means of family planning, to defend the family as a fundamental unit of society. And it also recognizes the sovereignty of a country to reach these goals within their cultural means. Throughout Pope Francis's papacy, the Holy Father has frequently supported the sovereignty of nations and warned about the dangers of what he calls ideological colonialism. Pope Francis warned that wealthy Western countries tend to impose ideologies that promote contraception, abortion, and transgenderism on developing countries, which more often than not do not align with those countries' values. In 2023, the Holy Father said that no power, political, economic, ideological, is entitled to unilaterally determine the identity of a nation or social group. But world entities do impose ideologies on nations. Bodies like the European Union and the United Nations, for example, have consistently blasted Poland's pro-life protections. Just this year, Poland, considered one of Europe's most Catholic countries, pulled out of the Geneva Consensus Declaration. Valerie Huber, president of the Institute for Women's Health and the architect of the Geneva Consensus Declaration, joins us now to talk about these developments. Valerie, Poland was one of the first countries to join the Geneva Consensus Declaration, or GCD. The country is very pro-life. Abortion is illegal unless the life of the mother is at risk or in cases of rape. Why do you think they left, and how did you find out?
Well, I learned about Poland leaving from Hungary, who is the secretariat of the Geneva Consensus Declaration. They didn't give the exact reasons for it, but I was reflecting upon what happened under the first Trump administration, where progressive nations and progressive foundations increased their foreign assistance to directly oppose Trump's foreign policy, which moved the United States away from ideological colonialism and to which progressives are undeterred to push this on countries. I suspect the same thing is happening right now.
On the flip side, the U.S. has rejoined the GCD. What do you think the impact will be in the U.S. and globally?
Well, I can't tell you how excited I am about this. Within the first 100 hours of President Trump's administration, he rejoined the Geneva Consensus Declaration. I think that this shows momentum is building. It also shows that President Trump has put a priority on women, on authentic health, and to remove those ideologies out of this discussion. I see more countries joining. I see more countries that are already in the GCD working together collaboratively so that this coalition is not just names on a paper, but they are actually working together in support of women's health, valuing every life, Protecting the family is foundational to society, and standing together to defend one another's sovereignty. We at the Institute have been working for the last 4 years to help keep the Geneva Consensus Declaration not only alive, but growing in anticipation of a day that we are in right now. And we've also been working through a model called Protego to help countries actually implement the commitments they made in the Geneva Consensus Declaration, so that not only do they have the skills and the resources to defend those values, but also to implement those commitments into policies and programs that benefit the people in their country. Looking at these next 4 years, I would like to see the Geneva Consensus Declaration become an indomitable force where every life is valued, where authentic women's health is improved, where families are strengthened, and where ideological colonialism never again can have a foothold, either here in the United States or in any of the countries around the world.
What inspiring words. Now, Valerie, do you have any message for Poland?
Well, you know, this is inexplicable to me why Poland would leave the Geneva Consensus Declaration. I invite them to reconsider and to rejoin, because the GCD is totally in line with the values of the nation and the values of its people.
And I hope that they'll be tuning in and hear your call. Valerie, thank you so much for the work that you've done and that you continue to do. It sounds like this is a great moment of hope and opportunity. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We continue now with a look at foreign influence, with a case that pro-abortion activists hoped would be Latin America's Roe v. Wade. The case out of El Salvador challenged the country's sovereignty by attacking their pro-life laws. It began in 2013 when a woman named Beatriz, who suffered from lupus, wanted to abort her baby, Leilani, who was diagnosed with anencephaly, which has an incredibly low survival rate. El Salvador denied her request for an abortion, but Beatriz obtained an early C-section instead. Her baby lived for 5 hours. Beatriz survived the pregnancy and surgery. Jump to 4 years later when Beatriz tragically died in a motorcycle accident. Pro-abortionists tried to blame her death on alleged weakness from her pregnancy. They brought this case to the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, pushing for a pro-abortion ruling. They claimed El Salvador should have allowed Beatriz to have an abortion.
Today, women like Beatriz only have two alternatives in El Salvador, jail or the cemetery. Adopt comprehensive laws and public policies to ensure that access to abortion is effective in practice and in accordance with World Health Organization guidelines.
In December of 2024, the Inter-American Court of Human Rights ordered the Central American country to establish guidelines for medical professionals to follow when a pregnant woman's life is at risk. It wasn't a complete loss for the pro-life movement because the court did not declare abortion as a human right and left El Salvador sufficient wiggle room in complying with the order. However, El Salvador was mandated to pay $40,000 to the pro-abortion NGOs that brought the case forth. This ruling demonstrates how abortion advocates leverage international courts to advance their agenda, seeking to erode pro-life laws and normalize abortion through legal and financial pressures. El Salvador is not the only Latin American country where foreign influences are seeking to push abortion. I spoke with Maria Paula of SOS Ministries about the El Salvador case and what's happening in her own country of Colombia. Maria Paula, thank you for being with us today. One example of the coercive tactics intergovernmental organizations can employ is the Beatriz versus El Salvador case. Can you give our audience a brief overview of what happened?
Yes, absolutely, Abby. Thank you very much for having me. Well, basically, what was happening was that the court was trying to decide on whether the sovereignty of El Salvador had to withstand in terms of protecting their own legal system. Beatriz's case was a very sad case, and she lost her life a longer time after she gave birth. And the feminist activists that put the case in the Inter-American Court were saying that she died because an abortion was denied. And so the ruling of the case withheld the sovereignty of El Salvador in terms of allowing them to recognize that it was not because of an abortion and that a different international court cannot make a country change their internal legal system just to abide by what, you know, ideology wants.
No, thank you for that helpful context. In a previous correspondence, you mentioned that in 2022 alone, over $90 million were allocated to promote sexual and reproductive rights across Latin America, with approximately $12 million invested in Colombia. Can you share the types of programs this funded and their impact?
Yes, absolutely. Not just by international organizations like Planned Parenthood, because they are investing millions of dollars, not only in Colombia, but in Latin America, to promote local abortion clinics, but also to do political lobby in our courts in cases just like El Salvador, because they are financing all the, you know, pressure within those cases and our courts. Specifically in Colombia, they're paying a lot of money, like the United Nations Population Fund and, you know, Planned Parenthood, and most of these organizations, they are financing non-governmental options and educational programs in order to take contraceptive policies, in order to do, you know, educational courses and tours around our schools, especially with people that are like in the lower stages in society and that don't have many resources, to teach them about sexual reproductive rights. And you know what that means. It means masturbation since you're 3 years old. That's what we have in Colombia right now. And of course, access to abortion as if it was contraceptive. You know, misoprostol and the abortion pills are taken for conception, contraception here in our country. So that means that a lot more people are getting access to these procedures that are, you know, against human rights and against life in general.
That's awful to hear. And so what can countries like El Salvador and Colombia do to combat these foreign ideologies?
Well, first, I think that it's very important that we talk about the El Salvador ruling. Mm-hmm. The Beatriz versus El Salvador case ruling, it's amazing because it's, you know, a precedent. And it allows more countries to, you know, understand that their sovereignty must be respected, even by international courts. And also, you know, being made aware, the pro-life movement within our countries, that we have a fight, and that in order to be able to win these legal battles and political battles, we have to first understand the enemy and understand what's going on. Second, we need to, you know, be able to track the finances and the resources and the investments so that we can, you know, denounce it, and that we can talk about it, and that we can question it out loud in the public sphere. Why are they receiving so much money from taxpayers as well? Why are they using the taxpayer funds to finance these type of programs? And third, we need to unite. If we're united, I'm pretty sure that there are a lot more battles that we're going to win.
I think that's an important message. And finally, to close, can you share a little bit about SOS Ministries' work?
Yes, absolutely. We're a Catholic ministry, and we focus on integral sexual education and also theology of the body. We're trying to present the dignity of the human person and the sexuality in terms of a comprehensive perspective. It's not just genitals, it's not just intercourse, and it's not just a physical, biological domain. It's the whole person, and we are valued, and our dignity must withstand, and we have to protect it. So we give courses and lectures and workshops, and we go to schools and universities, but we also have a lot of, you know, impact in social media, and that's what we want. We want to impact the culture. We want to get to each people and each person's conscience, because sometimes we feel like it's a huge thing that we cannot battle or that we cannot win, but we're trying to, you know, gain people one by one, conscience by conscience. Social media and content creation gives us that opportunity. And also, you know, the work that we do on field with schools and the Congress, many times that we've been asked to go to the Congress in Colombia and talk about this topic. And so we're doing all that we can. And so we ask you to do the same thing, to do all that you can and you're called to do.
Yes. Thank you so much, Maria Paula. And I hope our EWTN family will join me in praying for you and your ministry. That's much needed in Latin America. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
In Mexico, another state has decriminalized abortion. In a closed session of the Campeche State Congress, lawmakers decriminalized abortion for up to 12 weeks of pregnancy at the end of February. It is now the 21st Mexican state to do so. The bishop there, Jose Francisco González, warned that those who promote and facilitate abortion will be excommunicated from the Catholic Church. A lawmaker in Spain has publicly said she would like to study adding abortion to the nation's constitution. Spain's Minister of Equality, Ana Redondo, is now saying that such an inclusion would be, quote, a good way to protect sexual and reproductive rights, and, above all, the freedom of women. The Ministers of Equality's remarks come shortly after the March for Life in Spain, and 1 year since Spain's neighbor, France, made abortion a constitutional right. Also in Spain, a father has taken his daughter to court to prevent her from taking her own life in a landmark euthanasia case. 23-year-old Noelia is paraplegic because of injuries she suffered trying to take her own life in 2022. Testifying in front of a Spanish court this month, she told the court, quote, I want to finish with dignity once and for all. The young woman's father argues his daughter is suffering from a personality disorder and that she has responded well to rehabilitation treatment. Noelia has the support of the regional government of Catalonia after a local euthanasia guarantee and evaluation board unanimously supported her decision. It is the first time a Spanish court has heard a challenge to their euthanasia laws. Coming up, answering God's call to care for children in a country with widespread poverty.
To reach people to prevent abortion as well as prevent child abandonment.
From a young age, this missionary has desired to save babies and protect their mothers from the atrocities of abortion. Now, her mission saves thousands of babies each year in Ethiopia. That story when we return.
Child abandonment is very high in Ethiopia, as well as abortion and many other issues that affect children's lives.
Working to save the lives of babies in Ethiopia. Located on the Horn of Africa, the landlocked country has a population of more than 128 million people. And according to Cross Catholic Outreach, nearly one-third of the population lives in poverty. Amid that poverty is a great love and desire for life. Grace Center was founded to meet the needs of families physically, spiritually, and emotionally. They offer daycare, adoption, foster care, and more. I had the opportunity to speak with Grace Center's co-founder and executive director, Marcy Erickson, about her work in the African country.
Grace Center started after I realized that the Lord wanted me in a town called Bahardar, Ethiopia. It's really an amazing story how it happened. But I knew that He wanted me in Bahardar, Ethiopia. And I really felt like the Lord was calling me to adopt as many children as I could personally take on. And I was living in Bahardar, teaching at the local school. And, you know, I would get phone calls from people. And I received a phone call one day, and then within minutes, I received my first son. I was driving to receive him. And so he came to me when he was two years and 9 months old. And 3 weeks later, I received my son, James, when he was 13 days old. 3 weeks later, I received my son, Amanu, when he was 3 months old. And so after receiving my first three boys, and at the time I was still single, I really just felt like my hands were full. And was shocked when more people kept coming to me asking me to take more children. And I knew that God had a bigger plan for all of these children. And so I said a very simple prayer, and God answered that prayer in less than 5 minutes, and that was when Grace Center began, from this vision that He gave me and from that answered prayer. And that was back in 2006. And we started with about five foster children. And now we serve over 50,000 individuals in Bahardar, Ethiopia, annually.
That's incredible. They do say that when God answers prayers, He does it in overabundance. And I think your story is a testament to that.
Absolutely.
Tell us about your daycare program. Why is it vital to Ethiopian families?
Sure. Daycare is just one of the many things that we do. And what we found was that Many mothers were coming to us early on saying, I need to abandon my child. I'm single. I can't afford to feed my child and feed myself. And here, will you take my baby? And we said, you know, we have a better solution. Why don't you bring your baby for the day? And we will watch them and take care of them. And you're able to work during that time. And we do this with babies that are a little bit older. When they're newborns, we actually kind of almost give a maternity leave to the mother. We'll help cover her costs so that she can stay home and continue to nurse her baby. But we didn't realize that in starting this, we actually started the first infant daycare in the entire country of Ethiopia. We only realized it about 3 months or 3 years after we had started it, that there was no other programs like this. And so we looked around. I remember just looking around, and still to this day, looking around and seeing, you know, usually it's up to 90 babies that are with us for daycare, and seeing these children and knowing that many of them probably would have been abandoned. Many of them would have been abandoned in places where they would not have been rescued, so they would not have survived. And to know that the Lord saved their lives for them to be with us and for us to partner with these beautiful families is just amazing.
That's incredible. Now, I believe you also have a special needs daycare. Can you share what are some of the prevailing challenges around that?
Of course. You know, we have basically the only program that runs how we run it in Ethiopia. And we came, that came about because we were seeing so many special needs children. And what was happening was that these children were being basically locked in the mud huts while their moms would go work. And they'd come back at the end of the day and hope that the child was still okay. But no one was feeding them. No one was taking care of them. And they did this for survival reasons. They didn't do this because they don't love their child. And so when we were able to present them with this vision of daycare for their special needs child, where we have different therapies, physical therapy and occupational therapy and other things like that, that are focused on their needs and helping them to reach the goals that God has in mind for them, these mothers have been just overwhelmed with gratitude. And so we also include many special needs children in our regular school. And it just depends on their abilities and their, you know, what God is calling them in their life to do. And so we always pray for healing for each one of them, and we help them to reach as many goals as we can.
Now, Marcy, I hear you're in the process of expanding. How is that progressing?
We are. We're very excited. We're moving to another city that's about 4 hours drive south of Bahardar, our current location. And it's a population of about 300,000 people. Bahardar is about 500,000. And much like when we started in Bahardar, there are no other services for the people there. So, for example, there's no soup kitchens. There's nothing for homeless people. Absolutely nothing existing. And so we're very excited to be able to start operating in this area. We've already begun building, and we launched our program with Christmas dinner. We provided Christmas dinner for 150 families in that area. And we went to their houses and brought them a live chicken, among other items, which is different from how we would do Christmas dinner, but that's how they do it there. And so it's been able to already be started, and the people are so excited about it because they see the need of the people in their area, but they feel very limited on how they can help. And so they've done things like donate trees for our property, donate different building supplies, and that's almost unheard of in the area where we live, because overall the people more or less are quite poor, but they see what they have and they want to be able to share, to see God doing this work.
It's incredible to see that spirit of generosity. Now, I hear you have a baby rescue hotline. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, of course. So it started when I was on the interstate in the United States, and I saw a billboard sign that said, "Don't abandon your baby, please call this number." And immediately I started thinking, why have we never done this in Ethiopia? And I realized the reason we had never done it was because up until recently, most people didn't have phones. They would have one landline for maybe 20 houses. And just recently was when people started getting cell phones. They're still very, you know, very basic cell phones, but, you know, they have that ability to communicate. And so I thought, oh, we'll put billboard signs up in all of these cities and put a hotline number. And then God just stopped me in the middle of that thought, and he said, why don't you send out text messages? And so we started our program a few years back of sending the first text message went out to over 5 million phones in our area, saying, basically, if you're pregnant or if you have a small child and need help, please call this number. And so we have seen just thousands and thousands of lives saved through this. And every single pregnant person that we've talked to up to this point through our hotline has decided to choose life for her baby and has carried her baby to term and kept her baby and continued to raise her child. And so it's just absolutely amazing to see these miracles.
Amen. What a great mission. To learn more about Marcy's work and organization, visit GraceCenterFoundation.org. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.